Recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
Oh, excuse me. What about this one? The Lady Anne.
Oh, I don't think so.
Why not?
Well, for one thing, it's very nearly the oldest boat in the water, and it's certainly the slowest. 13 days to La Havre. Another half day to Southampton, if there are favorable winds.
Give us 2 tickets.
Exciting and new, come aboard, we're expecting you. And love, life's sweetest reward, let it flow, it floats back to you.
Drinking alone?
Where have you been? I've been looking all over for you.
I've been here, Alan.
But I...
Oh, Alan. Alan, you must be drunk.
No. I'm not drunk.
My dear guests, I am Mr. Raw, your host. Welcome to Fantasy Island.
Come along, Mr. and Mrs. Ransom. Champagne's getting warm.
Oh.
You know my wife, don't you?
Yes.
That's the captain. Haven't met Captain Prothero?
No.
No. There he is, Mr. and Mrs. Ransom. Yeah. Sit down, make yourself comfortable.
I'm very happy to meet you.
Oh, we're happy to meet you, sir.
You've had a pleasant voyage?
Oh, yes, sir. We're grateful to have been part of it.
Indeed.
Open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. We'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Take it away, Lynn.
Oh, God. Great opening, Robert. Very good opening. Yeah, we are actually 2 episodes to the end of season 4. Just this one and one more after this, and then we get into the final. Yay! Woo! Final season. Season 5. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
And Bobby... was looking at the signpost and saying, finally, season 5 is almost here.
Yes, that sigh says it all. Oh, gosh. And this is Super Bowl Saturday, and tomorrow is Super Bowl Sunday. So, does anybody have any favorites in the Super Bowl?
Go Broncos!
Yeah, Broncos! Woo! Yeah, I'm definitely rooting for the Broncos. Anybody root for crappy Seattle? I think you all know how I feel about Seattle.
I'm an AFC fan anyway, so no matter who else made it, well, I don't know. Maybe if the Eagles made it, maybe because years ago my dad knew Mr. Tuss, who owned the team. But other than that, AFC all the way usually.
Yeah, just root for the Broncos. No, I don't want Seattle to win. Seattle's not going. And Felix, you stop rooting for the Seahawks. No, what do you want the Seahawks to win for? No, and you Starbucks coffee my butt. Seattle sucks. No Seattle. No. Well, we're rooting for Broncos. Woo! Anyway, yes, this is absolutely the second from the last episode of season 4, the hour-long torture. Okay, so this one is called Passage on the Lady Anne, and I'm turning it over to Robert now for that opening clip.
Okay, here we go, all aboard.
And now, Mr. Serling.
Portrait of a honeymoon couple getting ready for a journey, with a difference. These newlyweds have been married for 6 years, and they're not taking this honeymoon to start their life, but rather to save it, or so Eileen Ransom thinks. She doesn't know why she insisted on a ship for this voyage, except that it'd give them some time. And she'd never been on one before. Certainly never one like the Lady Anne. The tickets read New York to Southampton. But this old liner is going somewhere else. Its destination, the Twilight Zone.
Well, 6 years into a troubled marriage, this young couple, they very hopefully embark on a second honeymoon, and it's their last chance for reconciliation. So they board this old ocean liner, the Lady Anne, and it's a 13-day crossing from New York to England. So the couple, Eileen and Alan Ransom, they soon realize that all the other passengers are elderly, and their ship seems to be following a meandering course. So they start quarreling and arguing. The whole trip, they're just quarreling and arguing on the ship. And they decide, well, they're going to get divorced when they return home. And then Eileen, she just kind of disappears. And when Alan finds her again, she's wearing the nightgown that one of their fellow passengers wore on her honeymoon. And then the Ransoms find their love rekindled. And they're dancing in the ship's ballroom when Lady Anne's engines suddenly stop. The captain enters and informs the young couple that he's putting them off the ship. He tells them there isn't time for lengthy explanations. So, you know, they're objecting, they're arguing, but the captain and the other passengers are adamant that the Ransoms cannot stay on the ship. So they're forced into a lifeboat, stocked with provisions, and they're set adrift in mid-ocean. While the Lady Anne speeds away, well, speeds as much as it can, and it's never to be seen again. And then the Ransoms, they're picked up by a cutter boat after a few hours, but they can't find any report of the Lady Anne docking in England or anywhere else. Ooh, there you go. There's your little Twilight Zone ending there. The Lady Anne has simply disappeared. So, you know, the Ransoms, you know, they're a young couple, and they're kind of in marital hell, and they believe that taking this cruise was going to solve all their problems, and they're pretty miserable. So, you know, they think this is going to help. But, you know, they still have some tiny bit of affection left for each other. Because if they didn't, why would they even try to make things work? So once they board the ship, and the ship used to be a premier luxury liner for lovers and honeymooners, they find out that their cruise mates are just a bunch of geriatrics who were once married on the Lady Anne. And they're sweet and feisty old people, but certainly not the age group that the Ransoms would seek out as friends or cruise mates. So, you know,
and
you can only imagine.
And an alien spaceship comes down, takes the ship away, Lance.
That's right.
Oh,
here you
oh.
go.
From the farthest corner of a distant galaxy and the deepest feelings of the human soul comes a fantasy to fill your heart.
I feel tremendous. I'm ready to take on the world. Oh, oh.
It is everything you've dreamed of. It is nothing you expect.
Oh, I can keep a secret. I won't tell anybody.
It's hard to know who to trust.
It is the mystery of an awesome secret. It is the miracle of everlasting life.
We'll never be sick. We won't get any older, and we won't ever die.
Beyond the innocence of youth and the wisdom of age lies the wonder of Cocoon. The 20th Century Fox presents... from the producers of Jaws and the director of Splash, Cocoon.
That would have been better, I think. I mean, you can only imagine, like, the shock at seeing this. You know, this young couple gets on board and there's all these old people. And it was very touching that the old folks, they're on this trip to celebrate their love, and not only that, but to say goodbye to the ship because it was going to be decommissioned. But it was also sad because, you know, a few of the passengers, they were traveling alone because their spouses had already passed on. So it was kind of sad in that way. But the Ransoms, they did not belong there. I mean, it was very obvious they didn't belong there. So why were they there? Well, somehow they warm up to the old folks and vice versa, and but still they had really not much in common with these old folks. What kind of funk do they have? But they do have something in common with them. They find out that these old folks, and it doesn't take much finding out for that, is that they were once young, and they were once starting out, and they were all trying to work their wisdom and magic on the Ransoms to make them realize that they truly did love and need each other, you know, because they all had to start out once as a young couple, and they had their ups and downs. So it seems to me that they knew this all along, but all they needed was, you know, the nudging from the passengers who had lived through all the tough times many decades ago, and they nudged them and pushed them and shoved them, and they eventually shoved them right off the ship.
Nudge, nudge, and wink, wink, know what I mean?
Wink,
know
wink,
what I mean?
Nudge, 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 nudge. Say no more, say no more. they had to be relentless. They had to be. You know, they had to reconcile them, and, you know, it worked. It was a rude awakening, but it was necessary. So, you know, it seems to me the Lady Anne, its passengers, the crew, they were all magical. The ship was majestic. It was mysterious. And the fog that surrounded it added to the mystique. But if nothing else, the ship had a tremendous amount of character. So in the end, you wonder where the Lady Anne went. It's a mystery, but it had to end up in a good place. That's what I think. You know, that,
hey, it went
the,
to Fantasy Era.
It
Fantasy
went to
Island
Fantasy
with
Island.
Mr. Wolf.
Yeah, Fantasy Island. There you go. Captain Stubing.
There.
And
hey,
Goku.
He was here last week, too. So
that's right.
By the way. Yeah. He had a book he's putting out, so he visited Ohio here last week.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah. Yep, he did.
Oh, awesome. God, he's in his 80s.
Gavin McLeod, I think.
Yeah, he's in his 80s. Yeah. Well, I mean, this episode, it was a bit slow at times. You know, it did really. Sometimes it didn't feel like a zone episode, but It didn't. I mean, it had mystery, suspense, magnificent cast. Wilford Hyde White, I mean, he's always a joy to watch. I love Gladys Cooper and Cecil Calloway. Gladys Cooper, she appeared with Robert Redford in season 3's Nothing in the Dark, and she'll appear again in season 5's Night Call. I just love that woman. I could watch her in anything. Cecil Calloway appeared in season 1's Elegy. And there was even an appearance by the adorable Cyril Delavante as one of the officers. I love Cyril Delavante. It was his 4th and final Senate appearance. And Alan Napier played the captain, and he's best known as Alfred the Butler in the Batman TV series. And one other repeat visitor in this episode was Don Kiefer as a travel agent, and many of you might remember him as Dan Hollis from season 3's It's a Good Life. He was the one who was turned into a jack-in-the-box by Anthony Fremont in that episode. And the musical score was good, you know, for the story. It was very appropriate. And it was the final Zone episode written by Charles Beaumont. So there were a lot of things I liked about the episode, especially the cast and the acting. It loses points for a little too much chit-chat, but, you know, I'm giving it a 2.5 rating, above average. I thought it was fairly good, you know. And so now, Robert?
Okay, thank you, Lynn. Yeah, I had a lot of questions about this episode. I talked to my wife, Julie, and I talked a bit with her about it, and one of the questions that I was wondering, you know, it was supposed to be a private journey for a bunch of old geezers. Why was it public at a travel agency? Because they were trying to bite a couple off, you know, I'll give you this much money, you know, $5,000, and so we'll give you $10,000 so you don't go. Well, the thing was, why was it booked in the first place for the public to buy tickets on if it was supposed to be a private tour for them, you know, going into their sunset years, so to say? I mean, the beginning of this almost had a Titanic appeal to it. It, you know, only was missing the iceberg. But secondly, there was the captain, crew, and passengers taking over the ship to keep it from being mothballed, or was the ship already decommissioned? Was this a death ship where everybody had already died and to the afterlife? So, you know, you remember at the end, it never reaches Southampton, England, so, you know, it becomes Flying Dutchman, pretty much. And, you know, another question was the ship taking the elderly people to a so-called Fountain of Youth, as in the movie Cancun, which I made reference to in our discussion with Lynn here, whereby the young not permitted to come along, you know, kick the can again.
Oh, yeah.
And who would wear someone else's sleeping gown that was 50 years older, unless being possessed to do so? That was the scene where, you know, he was trying to hunt for her and couldn't find her until he goes back to their cabin, and there she is, wearing one of the old women's dress, or nightgowns or whatever. It's like, okay. Fourth, if the ship was a ghost ship in existence, how were they able to relay a message to another ship that the young couple needed help and would be waiting for rescue? The ship had to coexist, or there would not be any to the lifeboats that they were in. If nobody had no record of the ship's exit, how could the manifestation exist? So, for me, this episode brought up a lot of questions.
How many stories are there of people hitchhiking in the middle of the night? A car stops, picks them up, drives them to their location, drives off. The person tries to find the car through the license plate. Doesn't exist. Okay? How many stories are there out there like that? Hundreds.
Yeah.
Thousands. And the people swear that it happened.
The
and
ship
does
exist.
Drunk and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, Dave said it did, didn't you, Dave?
The ship they existed, didn't they? I mean, there's no denying they were on the ship. Isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not. I mean, even the travel agent knew about it.
Right.
That doesn't
right,
mean
exactly.
That it's not a ghost ship.
Huh?
It may become a ghost ship, but it's not a ghost ship at the time they're on it.
That's true. It's not.
So did the public record disappear after the ship disappeared then? Did it come off the books?
I know where you're coming from. I mean, I've seen films, without spoiling it, you know, where there's people on a train swapping horror stories, and the denouement, as it were, is that they're already, well, I suppose it is spoiling it, but they're already dead, if you know what I mean.
The Peter Cushing one, is that the one you're thinking about?
No, he's
where he's
thinking,
Dr. Dead?
No, he's thinking of I believe it was a Hammer or was an Americus. I forget the title of it. They're all playing cards. It's an anthology movie.
Oh, okay.
They're all playing cards, and I believe there were like five passengers playing cards, and each story, you know, they relay their story, and each, you know, this guy was, he was killed by his kid's imaginary tiger.
Doctor
a real
something
tiger.
Or another. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Doctor something or other is
Doctor Terrible
garden.
Or
yeah. Yeah, the Garden of Terror, I think it was, or something. Yeah, something like that.
Well, like I said, it just brought up a lot of questions. I mean, it was great to see, you know, the old actors in the episode, like Lynn mentioned, and of course Joyce Van Patten. She's a sister of Dick Van Patten, who was on Eight Is Enough in that TV series. But unfortunately, this story was confusing, wordy, lackluster, boring, mind-numbing piece of work. So, I mean, there is one good point. You know, I was able to stay awake and watch this. I don't know if Bobby was able to stay awake while watching this or not. But find out here in a moment. But, you know, if this story was told today, I mean, it would be a twist on the Death Ship. Now, you remember the movie... And what happened with a certain line coming across the top of the deck there. You know what I mean about that one.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe
yeah.
Sea Creatures. The one with Trent Williams about them on a boat and there's a sea creature in the ocean or something like that. I forget the name of that movie. Or Vampires, for example. You know, that's what would be the twist on today. But unfortunately, I couldn't give this a very high rate. I only give it a 1 out of 5 for this episode.
Mm-hmm.
With that, I'll pass it over to Bobby. Bobby?
Okay, well, I haven't got a damn thing to say about this, to be honest with you. I agree with everything. I agree with everything Robert said at the end of his review. And I can't imagine, I saw this, well, I saw them all originally the first time they were on. But when I was a teenager, when this first time I ever saw it, and I'm sure I was bored to death, not really caring about a bunch of old farts and what they were going to do and whether they were dead or not. And now, 50 years later, now that I'm old enough to actually be on the boat and be one of them, I'm still not interested in what's going on. So it's just more of the same. It's a lot of talk and a lot of nothing. And it might have been bearable and in a half an hour story. But, you know, it just goes on and on and on and on and on. And I was going to say, Lynn had already said it at the beginning of the show, and that is the fact that the best thing about it is that it's the next to last one of season 4. And for that reason alone, you have to be happy about it. And actually, compared to what we have to do next time in that god-awful last episode, this is almost a classic by comparison to that. This is well liked at the Internet Movie Database. Gets a 7.1 rating. People think it's very, very sweet and very touching, but it just didn't really do anything for me. Had it been on the Love Boat and been a little funny, it might have been interesting. But it's taken way too seriously, and there's just nothing going on. Joyce Van Patten is everybody in it is dead except for Joyce Van Patten. She's still alive. She'll be 80 years old in March, and she's still acting. She was just in a sitcom a couple of months ago. So she's still active. She's hung on and still working. Everybody else is gone, including the man who played her husband. He died in 99. And there's just nothing going on here, that's all. It's just it's another boring, dragged-out season 4 episode that's completely unnecessary and could have been on any show. It has nothing to do with the Twilight Zone. And the worst part for me was, even sitting through it, is that it doesn't prove anything, because I'm not convinced at the end of it that their marriage is going to stay together. I don't, you know, he's too obsessed with his work. I don't see where there's the fact that they went on this boat, that he really learned anything. So I don't think any good feelings from it, such as they did it and it saved their marriage. And I guess that's supposed to be the point, but I don't feel that way. I think they're going to have just as much problems when they get back as they had while they were there. It's interesting to see a bunch of old actors like that all together. And, you know, they do a good job because they've been in the business for years. How could they not do a good job? So you get pretty much what you expect out of it. But the story is just weak and just not interesting. And it's the same. I wasn't aware that this was Beaumont's last story. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's the last one. It was actually from his 1960 short story called Song for a Lady.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Now, was this before he got sick? And then he had ghostwriters help him finish some of his stories?
Yeah, this was it. Yeah, this was the last one. Mm-hmm.
Well, he probably belonged on the boat himself, actually.
Yeah, it was pretty sad for him.
So there's just nothing going on. There's just nothing. I wasn't particularly touched by it. No, it's not the worst. It's not the worst episode of season four. It's not. I gave it a one, like Robert did, just because there's no reason to hate it. There's just no reason to really like it or to be fascinated by it. And I didn't find myself at the end of it wondering what it was. Were they already dead, or were they going to be dead, or any of that? It doesn't really matter. I mean, they sail off into the sunset, and that's it. And basically, that's the whole story. So it's just. It's just weak. This business in season four has been the longest agony of my life. It's just, I don't know when we started it. I forgot to look before we came here, but it seems like 100 years ago.
Last year.
Last year.
Well, we're only in February, so I'm sure that's
last year.
But it seems to have gone on forever, and it's just too much. And I know, hates when I say this, but you know. Take those two classics out of season five and put them at the end of season three and fold the series right there, because that's the best part of the series. Yeah, that's
No.
Because that's the whole problem with TV then and now. And it's all about how long you can last, not about whether you're any good or not.
We'll never agree on that. No, I don't want to agree on that.
It's like living a long life. You can live to be 99 years old, but if you don't do a damn thing with it, so what? What's the proof?
Robbie, we started In His Image June the 22nd.
Good God, oh my.
Like I said, last year.
Right, yeah. Season four may be a lousy season, but I'm still glad that it was five seasons. I wouldn't want three seasons. There's still good episodes yet to come.
Yeah.
Yeah, but three seasons in those days was the equivalent of five seasons now. Now they only do 22 episodes. Back then they were doing 30. So actually, had it ended at three by today's standards, it would have run 5 years. You got to keep that in mind. I mean, series ran much longer in those days than they do now. I'm in favor of just do your best work and then get out of there and say, well, you know, that's why, even though I'm not a great Seinfeld fan, you know, that series ended after 9 years, and they were number one in the ratings, you know, because he simply looked at it. You know, I've seen him on talk shows talking about it. He said we felt that we had done everything we could do and that there was no point in dragging it out until people said, eh, it's no good anymore. And I agree with that. I think at some point you just do it. Why does the series have to continue forever when you write a book? If you write a really, really great book, a bestseller, suppose it's 300 pages. Well, it's a great book. You did a great job. So it should be 900 pages? No. It ends at some point. You say, that's it. I've given you the best I've got, and that's it. So
MASH went on for 11 years, and for 25.
Yeah. And I think that went on too
long,
too.
That's right. Gunsmoke went on for 25.
Well, that
Bonanza was on a long time. Yeah.
That was
Doctor Who went on for 50, is on for 50 years.
50 years. Cheers was on for 11 seasons. Cheers was on for 11 seasons. Yeah. Some episodes, some series can work it out. Doctor Who, 50 years, yeah. Now, Felix here says that season four was a big bore. Oh, well, he's right about that. And he he also says the next episode will win the Golden Turkey Award. I do agree with you, Felix.
Golden Raspberry Award.
Yeah, but it's the perfect way to end, though. It's the perfect way to end the season.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want anything to be good in there, and then be able to say, oh, just when they were getting good, it's the end of the season. So it's perfect. Anyway, I agree with Robert. I'll give it a 1 just because the acting's pretty good, and they do a good job with what they've got. But they don't have anything. You know, so the Love Boat has already been mentioned, and Robert played the theme music, and this is where this belongs. Belongs on the Love Boat. Doesn't belong on the Twilight Zone, because it's just, it has nothing to do with the Twilight Zone.
I like the Love Boat.
So I give it a 1. That's it, Lynn.
Okay, Dave.
I actually like Twilight Zone. I don't know whether that's bad or not. I'm not saying this series is that good, but I enjoy watching this. But again, it's, you know, probably 30 years since I saw this episode. I watched it today. I probably won't bother watching it again. But remember, when these programs were made, they weren't sort of repeated. I mean, now not only do they make lots of episodes, but I remember when people in America were you know, almost committing suicide because Friends had come to the end, thinking there'd be no more Friends on TV.
Right.
The same with Star Trek. Think of the original Star Trek, 78 episodes. Apparently, Star Trek is on some channel somewhere in the world every minute of the day and night, every day, and probably probably on 20 channels.
And you know what? The same is true for I Love Lucy. I Love Lucy is on the air somewhere every day at every hour somewhere. Somewhere in the world, I Love Lucy is showing somewhere.
Well, the Big Bang is today's Friends, you might as well say.
Well,
yeah.
that's one of the trouble that here in the UK, there's some minor channels that they basically bought. They spent all the money on one thing, and basically one program holds the whole thing up. So you go onto one channel. It used to be, well, this is not new, I suppose, because there used to be a cowboy called Bonanza.
Mm-hmm.
And that used to be on, you know, like wallpaper. But anyway, the point I'm trying to make was, watching this, having not watched it for a very long time, I enjoyed my time watching it. It wasn't a great suspense. The reason why there's no great suspense is because we've all seen this storyline so often. But we've seen this storyline so often since this was made. And there's a great class of actors. Lynn did an excellent job at the beginning there, giving, you know, a rundown of the different people. I love, is it Cecil, is it pronounced? Calloway.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, I mean, the first film I remember seeing him in is I Married a Witch, where he's just the voice of the smoke and his daughter, and that used to be on in Halloween every year in the UK for about 10 or 15 years. And as you said, the chap who played Alfred, the Batman's thing, that was the captain, wasn't it? And all the other ones. And to the great admiration of these people, I mean, most of the actors there were indeed over 70. Dallas Cooper there. I mean, because I've often watched Twilight Zone episodes, and they got somebody as an old man, and then they're only 54, and I'm thinking, blimey, that's taking the mickey a bit too much. But I mean, Gladys Cooper was 75 when they did this. Wilfred Hyde-White, I think, had just turned 70. Cecil Calloway was 74. And of course, what I did like about it is the fact that you picked it out as well with the Cyril Dilettanti, is it? Even the actual, you know, the ship's personnel were old as well, which was, you know, everybody was good. I mean, it was a heck of a large cast. Admittedly, not everybody talked, but this was quite a big production, I would have thought, for this series. I know we say it's an hour long. By the way, it was season 4, episode 119, first aired on the May the 9th, 1963. I thought it was a gentle little thing, but there was a very couple of abrupt things that I feel embarrassing, put me off it, because everybody was already put off it in the first place. But it went up to about the 23-minute mark, which would normally be the ending time of the previous, you know, the half-hour episodes. And it went straight to a line from the Gladys Cooper character, "Oh, you won't have to die after all." You know, and that was obviously, you know, the big cliffhanger of some advert break. Yeah. But I did think that after that, for instance, when we had the scene where, by the way, he was a bit rude with his wife, never offered a blooming cigarette. She it's married 6 years, she still has to beg her cigarettes off him. I mean, good God. And I saw the abrupt, their acting was a little bit suspect, because at the bar, she literally had one drink and she was, barkeep, I'll have another, you know, as though she was drunk after the first blooming drink. But they go.
Hey, they
to
made
the,
it strong back then, Dave.
Right. Maybe.
I know somebody that smells a cork on a wine bottle and gets drunk.
Right.
Shado.
Some people are like that. One drink and they're looped. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Well, the other thing was that that conversation as well, she planned it because it was a 13-day trip. She wanted that time. And she wanted, presumably, time to work on him, to win him over. And that was the very first morning, lunchtime, as she got up. And she'd already given up on him. She'd already said, well, we'll just have to sit the rest of the trip out. They'd only been on the boat one day. But then we had this scene at the, looking over at the sea, and he's talking absentmindedly. And of course, it's a pea super all the time, and he looks around and she's gone. Then suddenly, I don't know whether they cut something out or whatever, but it seemed edited, because the next time he's talking to some crew member, and it's as though he's been searching frantically for about 4 hours, and then he runs into the purser's office, and have you found her yet? And this, that, and the other. And then, and then, of course, he goes back to the cabin, and there she is. And I do agree with Bobby. It was like, you know, although they never show a seduction scene in a show like this, the implication being that, you know, he actually bedded his wife, therefore everything's all right, okay. I mean, the editing was a bit funny there. But I love the cast. I mean, I don't think you should dismiss it too easily that the fact that because they're character actors, that, you know, that you got good performances from. There were still good performances for all that. So ratings are a bit difficult on me. Oh, yeah, the other thing is, I did think it sort of terminated rather abruptly. You know, basically, we saw all this unfold, and then the narration over the end basically tells us how it ended, as though they'd run out of time. They'd sort of taken so slow a progress on the first 40 minutes, they didn't have time to tell the ending, you know what I mean? I don't know whether it was going to be too costly to have them picked up and then reading newspapers later in the day, but they seem to wrap it up a little bit quickly. And I'll wrap myself up quickly by saying I'd give the cast 4, probably the story 2, so I'd give it a 3 out of 5.
All right, 3 out of 5. Okay, I gave it a 2.5. Okay. All right, Rick.
Like I said, who knows? You know, maybe it was a ghost ship. Who knows? You know, maybe the travel agent was a ghost or an agent for the ghosts in Harrow House. Okay, to blow my own horn. You know, what is the caretaker, or who is the caretaker? Is he part of the house? Is he a ghost? Is he what? What is he? You know, is he a human being that's the only one that can take the house, or vice versa? That's one of the questions I have for the whole episode too. But I personally, like I said, I have a feeling it was a ghost ship, and they were there to help out this young couple with their problems.
So when they were trying to buy him off, Rick, you're saying they were being tested to see if they really wanted to go on the boat then?
Basically, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, or it could be that the ghost sensed their reluctance to work on their marriage and whatnot, and say, you know what, nah, you don't really belong here.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good theory.
You know, it didn't really explain much. This is one circumstance where I agree with you guys that you need a little more storytelling. But maybe I'm adding too much. Maybe I'm reading between the lines too much, but that's my take on it.
Well, you're a producer. You know what needs to be done, and evidently you feel they needed to have a little more story. This was more of an appetizer than really a meal.
Good analogy, yeah.
But, I have no problem with the acting and stuff like that.
I love the actors. I really do. Because I liked everybody in it. And I love Gladys Cooper. I think she's terrific. And Cecil Calloway. I mean, I just love them all.
So I give it 2.5.
Yeah, same with me. Okay. All right, well, great. So anybody else have anything to add? No?
Really?
I think that's a joke.
Yeah, okay, so we've got from a 1 to a 3, and that's all right. You know, we've got a 1, a 2.5, 2.5, 3, 3. Okay, that's cool.
The show 2 weeks from tonight will be 10 minutes long. You can bet on that.
Okay, well, yes, that brings us to the announcement for the next show. Yes, 2 weeks from tonight.
I got a sound effect ready. You just go right ahead here.
What is it? Somebody's
What's the
snoring?
Next show?
February, Saturday, February 15th at 6 p.m., we will be discussing The Bard. Oh, yes, indeed. The Bard.
I'm looking forward to tearing this episode up. Big time.
You know, season 4 was a bad season overall, but to end it on, I mean, well, maybe in a way it was appropriate to end it on that note, and in a way it's kind of sad to end it on that note. It's like you've got to make it even worse, you know, to end it on such a bad note. But anyway, that's
hey,
what
Dave, it's
we...
like the doctor shaking out the radiation into his tennis shoes, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, didn't like that, yeah.
Yeah, oh boy. Well, at least that ends season 4. We'll be over and done with it, and we can get into season 5. So, that'll be 2 weeks from now, the 15th. Oh, the day after Valentine's Day. So,
aww.
I want to wish everybody a happy Valentine's Day.
Bah, humbug.
Oh, bah, humbug. You make sure you kiss Daphne on the lips.
Oh, my.
She's your Valentine. You kiss Daphne on the lips. And tell her, kiss her for me, too. I love that.
I don't celebrate imaginary holidays.
Oh, well, kiss her for me anyway.
Hey, we celebrate St. Patty's Day the next month.
Give her a Chinese New Year kiss for yesterday.
Yeah.
Such a Scrooge.
Yep.
Just kiss Daphne for me. Make sure you do. Shakespeare is rolling over in his grave in that next episode, Felix says. You know what, Felix? You're damn right. He sure as hell is.
Pocahontas! Robert E. Lee!
Oh, I am Shakespeare! Oh, my God. Oh, God. All right, guys. Well, I'll see you 2 weeks from now. Happy Valentine's Day to you all. Happy Groundhog's Day to everybody, because that's Groundhog's Day tomorrow. And hopefully winter will be over.
Get your movie of Groundhog's Day out and watch Bill Murray tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you what, that groundhog pisses me off. He's going to be a dead groundhog. I'm telling you. I know where he lives. Oh, no, I wouldn't hurt him. I don't hurt animals. But anyway,
I need to take care of him.
All right, everybody. Have a great Groundhog's Day. Have a great Valentine's Day. And I'll see you in 2 weeks for The Bard. Adios, amigos.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Let's go ahead and head into the distance.
Greg, when
Since you got the part of Gopher, did you think that the show was going to have the longevity that it did?
No, I didn't think we'd even get through the pilot, actually. the first pilot that we did over Christmas. So there was this tremendous feeling of, oh, my God, the business is rewarding us with a Christmas cruise. But nobody thought that it would go beyond that. I mean, as Gavin pointed out, the critics hated it. They said it would sink like the Titanic. So the only guy who really knew, of course, was Aaron Spelling, who really knew how all of you would bond with this show and create the kind of iconic status. But all of us, you know, the rule in this town is you never send your laundry out till the third season. And most of us felt, you know, this is nice, but we'll probably not make it. They put us on at 10 o'clock on Saturday night, which is normally a graveyard shift. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then we started beating shows like Kojak and Carol Burnett. And then they said, you know, something might be going on here. And remember, when we first went on, they thought this show is probably a little bit too adult mm-hmm. for families. Now, think about that with the costumes that you have on.
Well, it's because of Doc right there. Right. He was womanizing every woman who came on the ship.
Yeah,
well,
but this is a guy who had been Siegfried on Get Smart. So.
Yes, that's right.
Let's put it, in terms of the sex, the threat was not there. But anyway, so all of a sudden, this thing caught on, and we kept getting these wonderful ratings. Gavin, of course, always believed. He didn't you?
From the first.
From the very first
years.
Day.
Wow. Yeah, the first reading. I said 7 years.